and welcome to Worlds Apart. Depleting its inventories to fuel proxy conflicts overseas and then launching another weaponry-exhaustive war in the Middle East. President Trump's peacemaking ambitions have so far been most ruinous to America's own arsenals and reputation. Does the conflict in Iran effectively mean the end of U.S. military hegemony? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Hamid Reza Ghulamzadeh, director of Dipla House, a Tehran-based think tank. Mr. Ghulamzadeh, it's great to talk to you. Thank you very much for being available.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to join you.
We are now almost 3 weeks into the U.S.-Israeli attack on Iran. And over the last couple of weeks, the hostilities have quietened down a little bit, with both sides threatening punishing escalation if the adversary doesn't comply. How do you think this lull in fighting is likely to resolve itself in the coming days and months?
You know, right now we are in a situation that neither side has been satisfied with the results of the conflicts, and no one has made any significant achievements in the war, and the current situation is very fragile. So every day, every moment, it is very likely that the military campaigns break out again, or something happens that would escalate the tension in order to change the current situation, this stalemate that is in place right now. There are some factors that could be helpful or, let's say, decisive in this procedure. One of them was the President Trump's visit to Beijing. Some would say that it was likely that before the trade war, at the moment of arrival in Beijing, he might carry out some strike against Iran in order to show that it has might and strength, and not to appear weak in front of Beijing, which it did not happen, of course. The one thing that we can discuss is that the Americans are not interested in getting back to military campaign, and we can see this reluctance on the position that they took when there was some exchange of fire last week in the region. There were some Navy, some vessels, and some missiles fired from either side. And they came up with the conclusion that there has not been a violation of the ceasefire, which shows that they are reluctant on showing this violation. So that is the current mindset. But as I said, this dead end would be reopened with some big events, which could be a deal, which is very unlikely, or another round of military campaigns and fighting between the sides.
Now, I heard you say before that the American demands on Iran are excessive and out of touch, and that's the main block for any progress in negotiations. And I fully agree with you here, but the problem that the Americans, as delusional or incoherent as they are, they are also part of reality. And this reality, as crazy or sick or even evil as it may be, it also has to be dealt with somehow. What do you think would be the best way for your country, for Iran, to engage with this delusional reality in order to minimize the losses for yourself?
We know, and we have learned it in Iran by experience, that you cannot agree with the Americans. And even if you reach an agreement, they are not going to fulfill their commitments and to do whatever they promise you to do. And based on studies, based on experience, Americans are looking at negotiation table as a platform to dictate to the other side of the table what to do and what not to do. So with such a player, what you can do is that you need to stand in the position to dictate to them. So if you want something to be done with the Americans, you need to force them to accept that. By agreeing or negotiations, it would not happen easily, or let's say even if it happens, it would not be fulfilled by the other side. But if you use coercive diplomacy in various types of that, you can be hopeful that you can make them accept what you want. And that's what is happening right now. After the Americans violated the negotiations and used negotiation as a pretext, as a cover for attacks against Iran, Iran decided to show a upper hand by controlling the Strait of Hormuz and showing its military might. And Iran could defend itself strongly. And it was admitted by everyone in the world that Iran has been the strategic winner of this fight. Iran has lost something. Iran has been attacked or targeted. But it shows that Iran has been able to defend itself. And that's the point.
We all know that war is horrific, but sometimes it serves to release long pent-up tensions. And your country has been under U.S. sanctions and under American ideological and diplomatic pressure for so long that I wonder if on some level the Iranians may feel a degree of, I don't know, relief or satisfaction that this confrontation is now direct and out in the open, that you can respond in a variety of ways that were off limits before.
You know, this recent war, which are not finished yet, and we are in the middle of that, is clarifying some of the accounts that has been between the two sides. So we have been fighting indirectly for nearly 5 decades. They have put a lot of sanctions and military warfare against us, and we have all the conflicts that we have had between Iran and the United States. And now we are in the battleground, directly fighting against one another. And that's a war one could be interpreted as a victory. You just a few days ago, you celebrated the victory day in the Second World War, in which you did not completely destroy the Germans. What happened was that you could stop that war machine. And that's what Iran has achieved to do that. So the same way that you call it Victory Day, which I say it is a correct title for that, the same way Iran is calling it winning this war, because Iran has stopped this war machine, and it has done it after 47 years of sanctions and a lot of difficulty that has gone through that.
You mentioned the Victory Day as the conclusion of the Second World War, and it has to be mentioned that it's not only put an end to or stopped the German military mission, but it came at an enormous cost for the Russian society, the cost that we are still trying to absorb, you know, all those decades later. I hope that the same will not happen to Iran. I hope that the losses for your country will be lesser. But I heard you say in another interview that partly because of this conflict, you see a new Iran emerging. In what way is this new Iran different from the old Iran, you know, back in February of 2026?
First of all, with this military might that Iran showed on itself, it has a very clear deterrence in the region and a better upper hand in the region. So among the neighboring countries, especially the Arab countries that are housing American military bases in the region, Iran has proved that it is very strong and more powerful than them. And they cannot get into any conflict with Iran. So that's part of the story. But more important than that, the strategy that Iran had in this war is that it connected its own security to the security of the region, and more importantly, to the security of the global economy through the Strait of Hormuz. So with ruling over the Strait of Hormuz, Iran is going to control somehow we can say control the trend of the global markets and global economy, and with 20% of the energy markets on here and other things that you are well familiar with, Iran can have a say in the world. So that's why many analysts and many researchers are calling Iran a fourth world power. After the United States, Russia, and China, Iran is emerging as the fourth global world power. And with that role, Iran would not be the same like before the war. And it is now, it demanded to play as a global power. And that's the role that Iran needs to take and needs to, of course, to stabilize this image of itself as the as such a power. And then it can play more significant roles in the global issues and world issues and play a different type of role by joining this club of world powers.
Well, Mr. Ghulamzadeh, I think before Iran takes on the mantle of another great power, perhaps it may spend some of its energy on its own region, which is still on fire. The regional order is still in flux and will remain so for the foreseeable future. And I think the big question here is whether the regional players have had enough of hegemonically driven destruction and are ready to allow each other some space for coexistence, especially when it comes to Israel and Iran. What do you think?
So Iran is not going to recognize the Israeli regime. That's the end of this line. So there is no way that Iran would get into any relations or even to recognize Israel. But it doesn't mean that Iran would actively attack the Israelis. The point is that for the security and peace in the region, as we mentioned, which is correct, it is one of the most volatile parts of the world, there is one solution to have security based on the internal and domestic players, not with the outsiders. So that's why Iran is demanding the United States to close these bases in these countries in our region and to is asking Arab countries to stop this cooperation and to send outsiders, especially American bases, out of these countries. So if that happens, then there would be grounds for cooperation between Iran and Arab countries to stabilize the region and to work on peaceful and security cooperation with together in order to have the regional peace. Regarding the Israeli regime, Iran has not been after attacking Israel. The point is that it has always started from the Israeli side, actually. They have attacked Hamas, they have attacked Hezbollah, they have attacked Syria, they have attacked Yemen, and they have attacked Iran as well. So when there is an attack, there is a reaction as well. And that's what they have done. Iran believes that with Americans leaving this region, without their presence here, the Israelis would weaken and they would actually have encountered domestic difficulties as we are seeing right now about the domestic politics of Israel, and they would conclude everything themselves.
Well, wait a second. This is a very, very interesting point. We need to take a short break now, but I do want to come back to this idea of yours that with the Americans leaving, Israelis will come back to their home issues. Stay tuned here. We will be back after a short break.
I am the daughter of Oliver Tambo. Today, I celebrate the extraordinary life of my father, characterized by sacrifice, service, dedication, and loyalty to the people of South Africa and the African continent. He was a tireless advocate for justice and equality. He demonstrated this in his commitment to bring an end to apartheid in South Africa. Today, we draw inspiration from his life, which emboldens us to be the voices for those who are denied theirs. To honor his legacy, let's continue the fight for a more independent and unified Africa that cherishes its diversity, embraces its humanity and passion for others, a continent that must rise to take its rightful place in the community of nations. This is our continent. The future is in our hands.
Welcome back to Worlds Apart with Hamid Reza Ghulamzadeh, director of Diplo House, a Tehran-based think tank. Mr. Ghulamzadeh, just before the break, you mentioned this, well, I would say somewhat overly optimistic idea that with the Americans suffering this blow at the hands of the Iranians, with most of their military bases in the region now being hugely damaged, that, you know, they will pack up their stuff and leave, and with that, Israel will have no other choice but to mind their own domestic business. What gives you any sort of realistic assurance that this is how things are going to play out? Because the Americans are not known for, you know, giving up easily. Sure, they don't have the same strategy ability or the same resilience as perhaps the Iranian nation, but the Americans still have a lot of arms and weapons to support themselves.
Yeah, we have seen for the past few months that their equipment did not work for them, and it was not enough to open the Strait of Hormuz. And more important than that, other countries have realized that these bases are not supporting them, and it's not to protect them, it's actually the source of threat for them. So their security is threatened by them. And not only security, but also independence has been violated because Americans did not ask from those other countries for permission to use their bases against Iran. And that was the source of insecurity for them because Iran retaliated and attacked those bases and attacked those countries. So paying to the Americans, giving a home to the American bases. And at the end of the story, you don't have any security and you are actually being threatened by because of the very existence of these bases. So we are saying that the our countries are deciding gradually that they need to distance themselves from this position. And that's what happened to Project Freedom that President Trump said. And after 1 or 2 days, when the Saudis and Kuwaitis did not allow the Americans to use bases, they decided to suspend the project. So we are seeing the witnesses right now from the Arab countries, and even from the Americans, the news about the American forces being placed in the occupied land of Palestine or Israel was some news appearing on the American media outlets. So it so shows that the it seems to be a reality on the ground. On the other side of the story, we're hearing the news about Israelis working with the UAE and the Netanyahu's visit to UAE or a cooperation that they have had deployment of the Iron Dome in UAE shows that they are looking at the UAE as a proxy for the Israelis. If those military bases were supposed to be remaining in place in our countries, there was no need for proxies. You would have your bases, you would use them and attack Iran, for example. So it shows that they have already considered those bases closed. And they're working alternatives, including UAE.
Mm-hmm. Now, putting the issue of bases aside, a number of experts, including American experts, are now noting that American weapons, weaponry stockpiles are running low and that the United States cannot replenish them as effectively as perhaps other countries can. Do you think Iran would be better off at this point trying to, you know, keep the Americans further bogged down in the Middle East, in the Iranian front? Or do you think it's a good opportunity to, you know, let the Americans live in peace?
You know, for Iran, neither Iran nor the United States nor any country or any people would like war. And it would be better to resolve the situation without any war or conflict. And if there is a war, Iran would suffer some damages, which is undeniable. But Iran would inflict some heavy damages on the Americans and Israelis and their allies as well. And if war erupts again, the situation would be much in favor of Iran rather than in favor of its enemies. And Iran would have the upper hand. Iran has actually recovered all its offensive capabilities. And we know that, as you mentioned, Americans are not able to recover those defensive capabilities that they have. And they have run atop the bank of targets, and Iran is just beginning to show what a large list of banks of targets it has. But the point is that if what Iran wants could be achieved through negotiations or through coercive diplomacy, it would be much better than getting into a war with them. And that's the reason behind Iran getting involved in negotiations. But it is clear, Iran wants a guarantee that there would not be another war within a few months or a few years in the future. Iran wants to have the bases closed and wants the sanctions removed. And there are some other factors that Iran is seeking on them, and like the right to enrich uranium, for example. So if these rights are actually observed and addressed, then Iran is ready to stop the war and is not unnecessarily looking into a military fight with the Americans.
Now, Mr. Ghulamzadeh, this conflict has delivered Iran a very powerful leverage. I'm talking about control over the Strait of Hormuz and the pressure that can be put both on the United States and, frankly, on the rest of the world and the whole global economy. I wonder if it's possible, in your view, to apply this pressure in a differentiated way, in a way that gives you what you want from the Americans, but at the same time does not antagonize the rest of the world against you?
3 points about this, Strait of Hormuz. First of all, as I said, connections around the Americans are showing the world that Americans have started an unnecessary war of choice, which is damaging the whole world. And third is Iran's right to control the Strait of Hormuz as its territorial waters. And that's the three main factors in this situation. So Iran is allowing some ships to pass through the strait if they observe the Iranian conditions and all the considerations that Iran has actually introduced as the new regulation for passage. Nearly 30 vessels have gone through the Strait of Hormuz. So any vessels, trade vessels, which belong to countries who are not enemy or are not assigned to Iran, can pass through easily. Of course, there are technical issues. If the traffic cannot return to the normal one in a near future, but Iran is ready to do that if it is necessary. And it's working with different countries to have the passage done right now.
Well, Mr. Ghulamzadeh, let me ask you specifically about that. Do you think the other big players, let's say China or India, are fine with the current state of affairs surrounding the Strait of Hormuz? Or do you think that they have accepted it as the new normal, or would they rather go back to the pre-conflict free flow of tankers?
Of course, they would prefer not to pay anything for the seas. But the point is that they have admitted that Iran has the right to control over the Strait of Hormuz because it is its territorial waters, and Iran is not a signatory to 1982 Treaty of the United Nations, or the IMO. So Iran has all the rights to consider it its territorial waters. Second, to the extent of my knowledge and information, they are already working with Iran, and there have been vessels belonging to the Indians or to the Chinese who have actually worked with Iran and have passed through the Strait of Hormuz. There was some news by Reuters and the Americans and the State Department of the United States that the Chinese have agreed by the Americans that they are not accepting tolls being received by Iran in the Strait of Hormuz. So Iran is not receiving tolls. Actually, this is the correct technical term for what Iran is doing. This is about a fee, which is considered for the services that are being given there for the security and the shipment of the services or such things, which is very normal. We have in other parts of the world as well, including the straits or canals that the Americans are controlling. So they have accepted it as a reality, and they're working with Iran about that. And that's something that is legal, and they are working with Iran right now.
Well, you mentioned that they have accepted that as a reality, and yet there have been numerous reports about the Chinese, numerous reports I should add in the Western media, that the Chinese are growing increasingly impatient over the blockages at the strait, and that they're putting pressure on their allies in Pakistan to expedite the mediation process. Do you have any concerns about the outcome, and if Iran becomes too presumptuous or too, let's say, entitled to the Strait of Hormuz, that it may create more common ground between Washington and Beijing and ultimately work against your country?
Actually, opposite to that, it is the problem with the Chinese vessel is the American blockade in place. So Iran will have any problem with the Chinese and is allowing only Chinese vessels to pass Strait of Hormuz because they have very friendly relationships with Iran. They have actually some sort of alliance with Iran. So it doesn't have any problem from the Iranian side. The problem is that the Americans are not allowing the vessels starting from Iran or ending to Iran to to pass through this to the Sea of Oman.
Now, one last thing I want to ask you before letting you go. One thing in common between China and Iran is that both nations appreciate and I think are capable of long-term strategy. They were aware of the possibility of a war with the United States. They studied their enemy. They have put in some preparation to be able to face it. And it's very different from the Americans who still believe that they can launch any war at any place in the world against any adversary without any preparation. Do you think that's likely to change now? Do you think the Americans perhaps will put more thought or more preparation into their military escapades?
I think they have already learned some lessons, not completely, but they have learned the lesson that it is not like Venezuela, that you go there, you carry out some Hollywood-style operation and then get back home and establish a show, and that's all done. Everyone claps for you and admires you for your achievement. Iran proved that the American power is not endless, and they can be defeated, and they have already been defeated. And the American, let's say, arrogance and the exceptionalism mindset that they have is destroying them, actually, is weakening the Americans. And if they would like, if they continue the way they are working right now, the American, the Trump style of the politics and the Don't Roll doctrine that he introduced earlier this year, I would say that they would actually diminish into a regional power, the same way that the Monroe doctrine actually achieved. Monroe increased the American power to be a regional player in the American continent. I would say if they continue the way they are doing right now, the Americans, let's say Donald Trump, would decrease American power into a regional power and continental power, only limited to the Western Hemisphere and to the American continent again. But this time it would be a decline, not a rise like what Monroe did at that time centuries ago. So they would better learn some lesson from that. But I would say with the rising powers in the world and the changing dynamics of power in across the globe, the Americans would never be like what they used to be, let's say after the before the Cold War. It's not the same world anymore, and it's not the Americans being the only hegemon in the world.
Okay, well, Mr. Ghulamzadeh, we have to leave it there, but thank you very much for sharing your analysis with us.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to join your show.
And thank you for watching. Hope to see you next week on Worlds Apart.